seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
And it is my pleasure to be sitting in for Maria today. She's enjoying a very well-earned and well-needed vacation today. But sitting in for Maria Chaleos, I'm Dave Meekham.
There's a commercial on NerdTech. I don't even know what it was, but they were having Lady Gaga advertise it.
Uh-huh.
And it said the only medication that cures, and then they had Lady Gaga on the screen under it.
Okay.
Cures what?
I don't know.
We do not mean to offend Lady Gaga
yes.
here. All right.
NerdTech apparently cures Lady Gaga.
Back to the greenhouse show. we've been talking about Christmas trees quite a bit, and we've had a lot of calls. I've noticed this, especially over the last few weeks, about people trying to get rid of trees. They've been dealing with volunteers and trees they've already taken out, or the proper way to get
volunteer
rid of a
Siberian
tree.
Elms, volunteer cottonwood trees, or they'll plant one and not realize that it will literally be 60, 70 feet tall. When it's fully grown, and it will reach over the house, over the road.
Or it's lifting concrete.
Yeah, and so we get a lot of calls about how to kill the stumps. And the trick to this is actually not to cut the tree down immediately, but it's actually to drill the trunk. You can use a paddle bit or a wood boring bit. You want that thing a good half inch at least wide. And you go in on a 45 degree angle, 3 or 4 inches into the trunk. And you do that in a ring and fill it up. Every hole you've made, have someone go behind you, and you get concentrated weed killer, whether it's a lawn weed killer,
glyphosate.
Those are the two main ones. And you fill these holes up and just let it sit all winter. And as this should have been done about a month ago, but I think you could still get away with it. But as the tree absorbs that herbicide into the root system, is far less likely to come back the next year. And then in the spring or even in the middle of the winter, you can cut the tree down.
Yeah. And you absolutely want to do something like that, because if you don't, you're going to be dealing with all these volunteers for however many years to come.
Well, the tree has all this stored energy in the root system preparing for the spring. You cut the tree down and all of a sudden the root system says, wait a minute, the top of the tree is gone. We're going to make new trees. And the root system is called adventitious buds, but they form new trees along the roots. And they can that root system has energy to produce those for years and years.
Yeah. And I'm dealing with that because we did have some trees taken out. It was the city took them out, but that process was not followed. So I'm going to be dealing with these volunteers for years to come. And I don't know, I kind of almost cringe a little bit when we talk about taking out trees. I mean, sometimes it's absolutely necessary. I get that. But man, it just seems like a sad thing to remove a tree.
It does. You know, it's heartbreaking. When I lived up in Davis County, there was an area of Layton that a couple of homeowners had put cottonwoods in their park strip, 3 or 4 foot wide park strip, and the cottonwoods were mature. And you could see the trunks had actually grown over the cement on the curb and the sidewalk, and had totally heaved the sidewalk up to, a strong angle that you could not walk on it.
That was the issue with the trees in our neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's heartbreaking to, even if it's a cottonwood, and I don't usually recommend people plant them, it's still shade.
Yeah, and it's still a magnificent tree that's taken all these years and effort to get to that point, and then boom, gone.
Yeah, and there used to be a Visa commercial that would have, you know, it'd be have a father and a daughter going to an NBA game and then going to get dinner and milkshakes after. And it would say the cost of NBA tickets, you know, $79.98 or whatever they are there. I know they're more expensive now for the good seats. And, you know, the cost of dinner with your daughter, $39.99, but the relationship with your daughter, priceless. Yeah. Well, these trees planted in the wrong places are kind of like that, to where it's the $30 tree you paid $30 that's now $10,000 to remove, or $15,000 if they've got to bring in cranes and things. But it's just heartbreaking to see people have to, one, take kill the tree to remove it, but then just the removal of the tree.
Yeah, it's I think the moral of the story here is plan. You know, if you're going to put a tree in, and know what you're putting in, know that you're putting it in the right place, and know what the ramifications are years down the road.
Yeah, and that you can look the trees up, and oftentimes when you look up tree information, if you're getting it from another state, those trees will be bigger in Michigan or Oregon than they will here, just because the climate,
right. It's
more humid, they get more natural moisture, the soils are better, but, you know, a tree like Norway maple, or, you know, some of the ash that we used to plant, will get 50 feet tall. And people don't fathom how tall 50 feet is. It's just something they can't visualize. And so what I will recommend they do is get a measuring tape, have one person hold it, another person walk out until it hits 50 feet and see how far that is. And that's how tall in 25 or 30 years that tree will be. And if you don't have room for it, you had better find a smaller tree. But that's one thing I recommend. You know, when you, even though it's horizontal instead of vertical, get someone with a measuring tape and then have them start walking until that's how tall you want the tree. And then let's look at some options.
Right. You don't want to have to do that just to turn it into firewood, you know, 15 years down the road. So think about that, plan it out, and there are resources to help you do that. The extension's one of them.
It is. And the USU Tree Browser at treebrowser.org, they recently revised that, updated it, so it has very current information on landscape trees for Utah. And there's tons of other information out there.
Excellent. Or just plant an apple tree.
There you go.
All right. Before we jump to the break here, let's take a call, Ton. Eileen's been patiently waiting, calling in for Murray. Good morning, Eileen. How are you today?
Hi there. Oh, yes, I planted 5 large avocado seeds. You know, I've always wondered if they would grow. And so I covered them up and put them in a pot with another little plant. And so that I just kept watering them. And then I kind of forgot about them. And, of course, I kept watering the pot plant because the other little plant was there. And 5 months later, they popped up. And they started to grow, and three of them, two of them died, and then they grew about 2 feet tall, and another one died. But I've got 2 that are growing up. They're 4 feet tall now. I've just watched them for fun, you know, and now I can't leave them out to freeze. I brought them in the house, and I wondered if there was any future for them.
Well, they'll probably never produce fruit. Now, there's always somebody out there who's like, oh, I got this, and it produces every year. But 99 out of 100 trees, because of our day lengths, probably will not grow fruit. And so what I would recommend doing is just using them as a houseplant, transplant them into a new pot every 2 to 3 years, and keeping their roots a little bit bound will slow them down. But you may eventually need to do some pruning on them to keep their size, and just keep them off to the side of a bright west or south window.
Oh, how tall do you think it might get?
Well, in outside, they get very tall, 30, 40 feet. But in those pots, you're trying to keep the size, you know, contained. You don't want them getting that tall.
Uh-huh.
And so that pot will help keep it small, is what Tana's saying.
How far, if I planted it in San Diego, it would take about 5 or 6 years before it would produce
at least
anything.
5 to 6 years before it would start to produce fruit.
Oh,
maybe longer.
How far south could I? You know, it wouldn't survive out
San Diego.
Here. not St. George.
Phoenix.
Absolutely not. St. George is too cold for citrus in St. George, and avocados are even less hardy than citrus.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck with that, Eileen. Appreciate your call.
Okay. Bye.
All right. And we're going to jump out and take a break here, Ton. When we come back, I have a tree for you to identify. We'll see if you can pull that off.
Mark and Murray, we've got you on. Questions about a redwood tree, and you will be coming up too.
We'll also chat with Mark, indeed. All right. We'll be back on the other side of this break with more on the KSL Greenhouse Show. It's the KSL Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio, and we are here to help you and answer your questions. That's what we're going to do right now. We've got Mark calling in from St. George. Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. How can we help you out?
Well, I have a home down here in St. George, and my mother-in-law had planted, as far as I can tell by looking it up online, it's a red bud tree. It has really pretty pink flowers in the spring.
Okay.
And what I'm wondering about, it has hundreds of the seed pods that stay on the tree. Do I need to try and knock them off, or will they fall off eventually by themselves?
Oh, they'll eventually fall off, and they may sprout. I mean, it's actually, you can plant redbud from seed, and when they germinate, kind of plant them. They're not hard to get established, but they're a little more sensitive than other trees. Do you know if she planted... There is a redbud native to the St. George area that gets about 20 feet tall. I believe it's called California redbud, and it's not hardy up here. And then you have Eastern redbud, which is the hardier one that you see more often. Do you know which she planted?
And I don't know which one it was. It's just that the seed pods, they kind of make the tree kind of look ugly after all the leaves are gone. I didn't know if it would help to tear them off, or would they just come off?
They will stay there until spring, and sometimes they do stick even longer, and so you can take them off, but they usually fall off eventually, but sometimes not.
Okay. I just kind of wonder. Maybe I'll wait till spring and see what happens.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your help. I love your program.
Thanks for being there. I appreciate your call, Mark. Ton, I've had a friend of mine text me, my good buddy Joe, and he has got a picture here of a columnar oak. And he's looking to know what variety this is.
It may be a variety called Kindred Spirit. It looks like it's had some pruning done on it, like some shearing maybe. If it's that narrow, Kindred Spirit will stay fairly narrow. But when you talk about columnar oak, there are literally probably 15 to 20 versions of columnar oak available. And so it can be quite difficult because the leaves look the same from tree to tree, but the growth habits slightly different. But my best guess is Kindred Spirit.
There you go, Joe. Hopefully that helps you out, my friend. All right, let's take another call here. We've got Jim, who's coming into us from Benjamin. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. How can we help you out today?
So I have a rhubarb plant that my great-great-grandmother brought into Emory County when they moved down there and settled in Elmo. And cutting of it moved to my grandmother's house and then my mother's in Huntington. I moved some over to Linden when I first moved there. And now we've sold our place in Palmyra and moved to Benjamin. And I would like to bring a start of that to our Benjamin house. Wondered when the best time to do that was.
Early spring, as soon as you can dig and the ground isn't frozen, get a start and move it. So this is Jim Jensen, who is trying to be incognito, who has been in youth programming.
Jim, you've been outed.
You've been outed, but there's a lot of people in Utah County that know Jim Jensen, and if you've ever been involved in horse or livestock programming, he likely taught you if you're older than maybe 25 or 30. So, Jim, we'll give you a shout-out for all the youth programming you've done and supported. But, yeah, I would move that sometime in early to mid-March.
Okay. How about planting peach trees?
If you can find them, early March is a great time. But usually, well, if they're out of Oregon, they'll come in March and early April. If they're out of California, sometime April to May. But as soon as you can plant them in the spring.
So ones that are leftovers in nurseries right now,
You could certainly plant them, yes. Just make sure that, scratch the bark to make sure they're green underneath, and you can certainly plant them if there's some left over.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. It was good talking
to
you.
Jim, thanks for your call.
Good to talk to you.
Nice to have a celebrity on the show.
Well, Jim is one of those people that is just, so many youth came through his programs, if they were on farms, raised livestock, that he was their teacher. And I will honestly say that when I first came down here, I was having to cover for livestock problems, and I didn't know a lot about livestock. I still don't, but Jim generally knew more than the, a lot oftentimes are PhD people on campus, about how to take care of a chicken or a sheep, just because of his years of practical experience.
Right.
So he's been a very good and still is a very benefit to the community.
Well, that's hugely important, because we have so many kids who go through schools, and this was me, who never had a chance to get involved in agriculture or livestock or any of the, you know, those types of, to learn those types of skills, and or even understand and know how, you know, that functions and how that world works, and that you can have a career there, right? And how important that is to our economy and to us who like to eat, right? And how did you get involved in it, Kent?
So, like I said earlier, I'm fourth generation, so I kind of was born into it. And, you know, I grew up working on the farm. You know, we would help out with the cherry harvest. We had a roadside stand. I would sell the fruit. And then, you know, as I got older, I kind of grew apart from the farm. And then I decided, hey, you know, we have these great apples. I should take these to a farmer's market and see what happens. And so doing that kind of got me all the way to where now it's my full-time job. My father's retired, and so I left the corporate world, so to speak, and decided to give it a shot, and I've never looked back.
I don't know. I don't know if I could do it, but I'll tell you what, to me, it's just such a cool thing. But it's hard work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a dairy farmer, a fruit grower, or, you know, you grow flowers, whatever you do, it requires a lot of patience. It requires a lot of long hours. I mean, and it's still never a for sure thing, because Mother Nature can, you know, it can destroy what you've put a lot of time and effort into in a matter of seconds. And so you're kind of at the mercy of Mother Nature, and you know, that can be pretty frustrating, but you take the good years and appreciate those, and especially when you have had a bad year. So it kind of eases itself out.
A bad disease, a storm, late frost. I mean, that can just destroy you.
It really can. And, you know, a lot of growers are diversified in a way to where, you know, and I've seen this a lot more now, and this is really big back, you know, back east in the Midwest and even on the West Coast, a lot of agritourism. And so that's one thing that a lot of farmers have started doing, just to help supplement it. Because if you're just, you know, growing one crop, you got all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
If you can find another revenue stream and bring people to your farm, you know, just to have them have the experience of milking a cow, or have them, you know, try some cheese that you have, or whatever it may be, it really gets people involved, and it creates extra revenue. So all your eggs aren't in one basket.
Yeah, I would like to talk a little more about agritourism after the break.
Yeah, we do need to take a break now, and we'll do that after the break. We'll cut out and we'll break now, and on the other side of news, traffic, and weather, we'll talk a little bit more about this. Thanks for joining us on The Greenhouse Show. We'll be back with more.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
It is indeed The Greenhouse Show, and it's been fun for me to sit in with you again today, Ton, while Maria's out, and I always love hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, we've had a good show.
And it is the last half hour of The Greenhouse Show, so if you do have a question, now is the time to get through to us. The lines are open, KSL Talk. But we were talking about agritourism going out of the break, and that's something that's really interesting to me. I haven't really ever thought about it much. Is that something that you participate in at your orchard?
No, we don't do any of that right now. I mean, maybe sometime down the road we'll do it, but it's not on the horizon.
Nobody wants to come pick an apple?
Oh, they want to come pick an apple. There are some orchards and some farms that will let you do that. So,
you know, there's one just a few miles from where his farm is and my live, Riley's You Pick, and they do a pretty good business with, I think, peaches, apples. They have gardens.
They have like raspberries, squash, and everything.
Yeah. And it's funny because I know that it's, you know, growing up in agriculture, I don't sometimes find it enjoyable to go pick a bushel of apples. But you'll have a family come in with the kids with a picnic.
That might be as close as they ever get.
Yeah. And they'll sit there, and I've talked to, there's another, a few other U-picks, and they'll come in and have a picnic and pick those apples. And it's just almost like they're at the park. And I was like, I grew up doing that. And that is like the last thing I wanted to do, especially as a teenager.
I'm laughing because if I tried to get my daughters, hey, do you want to go pick apples? They'd like, look at me like, what?
Laughing at you.
But then I have them help me plant tomatoes and pick tomatoes and pick cherries and do these kinds of things. So it's not as appealing to them because we do those things already. But
yeah, I mean, and there's all sorts of agritourism, and it's been building. And I think as people have gotten away from agriculture, they've been wanting to come back and at least get a taste of it. And not just, you know, not that it's, they're out there picking a few bushels for the orchard, but you know, you can pick what you're going to use or go pick it and then can it or preserve it. But it's so unknown anymore to the general population that it can be fun to do. And so Southern Utah County has become a hotspot for a lot of farms, as Kent talked about, diversifying into different things, because it almost seems like every exit south of Provo has one or two operations in the fall that you can go on a ride on a hay wagon to pick up, to minimally pick pumpkins, but then they'll have a lot of things for the kids. And,
yeah,
you know, and it's literally every exit has something, and they all vary a little bit that you can come and during that harvest festival in the fall and to Halloween and just have all sorts of different experiences.
Well, and I think this is a great thing, because how many kids otherwise would grow up and just think produce is a section of the grocery store?
Have no idea where milk comes from or no idea right. where the pumpkins are harvested. And to be able to go and actually pick one and just see the process of it. And, you know, a lot of the farms will have slides set up, so they'll stack up hay and put a slide on it and climb the hay and ride down. They have just all sorts of different things you can do.
Have you seen the apple cannons that they've done at some of these? That's pretty fun, too.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, that gets the kids usually like to do those. Some of the farms, they have these pressurized, literally, it's like a cannon, and they put these apples that are not sellable, they're not good apples, and then they get to shoot targets. And so, you know, there's just lots of different things that a lot
you
of these farms.
You had me a cannon. Let's
go. Yeah, let's go.
Well, I know that at some of these, they have these apple cannons and targets, and you can pay $10 or $15 for 40 or 50 hours. And 40 or 50 apples. But then the apples are cleaned up after the fact, and they are fed to animals, and so they're not wasted.
Well, generally, you don't think of, you know, agricultural operations, farmers, ranchers, whatever, as wasting anything. They can't afford to.
Yeah. No, we try to get the most out of everything we can. You know, if we have to cut out trees, well, we're going to make firewood. You know, we're going to do everything that we can to not be wasteful. Even the fruit. If we don't have apple cannons, like I don't have apple cannons, I'll donate the apples to a pig farmer or somebody who will use it as feed. So it all gets used. It doesn't just get dumped. That's
right.
Just a waste.
Right.
Yeah. And so on this, and I don't want to exclude, there's a few operations in Utah County or in Salt Lake County, but when you start going north of Ogden, they start to become a lot more common again.
Right.
And so I live in Southern Utah County, and so I'm a little more familiar, but I know that there are a lot of these agrotourism businesses north of Ogden that you can also visit. And then some of the latest things I've seen them getting into are during the warmer weather, they will open up to travelers. And so if you have an RV, you can pull in, and some of them you can stay the night for free with the expectation that you go into the store and buy some produce and some things, or if they charge anything, it's, you know, $30, and then you can, you know, move on. But in Southern Utah County, there's one that during the summer, there's usually 10, anywhere from 5 to 10, maybe 15 motorhomes and camper trailers pulled up, staying the night. They all go into the store, and then, you know, the morning they kind of pack up and leave again. But that's also becoming a lot more common.
That's really cool. And I think that that's a win-win because people get to see and learn more about the agriculture. They get to be a little bit more involved with the produce that they're eating and taking home. And it helps out the farmers.
It really does.
This is a good thing. All right. Let's take Helen's call really quick here. Helen is calling in from Murray. And good morning, Helen. You've got a question about some garlic.
Yes, I've got some Kranzager or Candace. I don't know how to say it. It's K-R-A-N-D-A-S-G-A-R, red garlic. It's a hardneck garlic.
Okay.
Is it too late for me to plant that?
No, it's just going to be a little harder because it's colder and the ground might be a bit frozen. But if you need to, get it out. And there's still enough cold that it will come up in the spring and do what it's supposed to.
And then it says to cover it with a mulch. Can I use something like Nutrimulch?
Yeah, as long as it doesn't get too... It doesn't need to hold a lot of water if it's going to get waterlogged. So Nutrimulch would be about as dense as I would go, but you could use some wood chips. But if you have Nutrimulch, that should be fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck with that, Helen. Thanks for your call. And let's jump out and take a break here and come back with our final segment on the KSL Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. It's the KSL Greenhouse Show, and if you have a question, you have just a few minutes. We have a line or two open for you. It's KSL Talk is the number. And again, this is our last segment, and as always, Ton, it just flies by.
It does. It started at 8 o'clock, and it's over 11, and you're just like, wow, that was fast.
That's because we get to sit here and have fun and talk about things that we enjoy. And Ken, it's been a real pleasure to have you here today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me again. It was great to bring some different kinds of apples and let you try something new.
That was a lot of fun. I discovered a new apple that is really unique to,
to Provo. Utah, really. Yeah, Provo.
And it's a wonderful apple, and I'm going to at some point try and twist a graft out of Kent so I can plant one of these trees in my backyard.
But and we've been discussing in between the questions and things just the importance of local agriculture.
Yeah, and that's been a great opportunity because it's not something we get to do on the show very often, but that you bring a really interesting perspective to everything we've been talking about, Kent.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of families out there that are, you know, small farms. There's even the bigger farms. I mean, they all need the support of, you know, all of us Utahns to help keep them going because, you know, land prices are, you know, they're extremely high. And it's really tempting for a lot of these farms to want to, you know, sell out and retire. But a lot of people like myself, we just don't want to do that. And we just need all the support we can get to keep it profitable so we can keep going.
Yeah. And one of the really, probably the easiest way, and maybe there's a better way, tell me, but is at the farmer's markets. Isn't that the best way to help you out?
Yeah. For me, that's one of the ways. And there's many other farmers there as well. I know Salt Lake has a winter farmer's market right now. Ogden starts one up, I think sometime in January. I believe that there may be one in St. George, so they're kind of spread throughout the state. And during the harvest season, you know, usually from June through October, they're everywhere. And, you know, there are some local grocery stores, too, that really have a big push on local. So, you know, we appreciate all the help that we can get from them as well.
You know, I will say that even in the grocery stores, Macy's does a great job of featuring local produce. You know, they will say, you know, it's from Utah, look for the Utah zone. If you're in grocery stores or the box stores for local produce, it'll have that on there. So look for that in the local retailers that do carry local that are supporting that. And then also a lot of the local farms will have their own farm stand somewhere on the farm or near it. And so you can drive through and see that and, you know, talk to them about it. You know, where did it come from? And there's usually a story to the produce. You know, we're just a few miles away from here. This was picked this morning. You know, we're growing varieties that we find do well. And so there's just a lot of different ways to do it.
Well, and you mentioned Utah Zone, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Tom, but I believe that's a program that's done by the Department of Agriculture within the
state.
It is. And there is a website, and you can go on that website and find farmers markets and find ways to get obtain local produce that's grown here in Utah and help our local farmers. And, you know, help yourself because it's great produce.
Yes. And I know of local bakeries that, you know, people like Kent or Chris Riley or others deliver to on a weekly basis, you know, fresh apples, so that they're using local apples and other fruit in their bakeries. And so there's, and it's becoming more common, but anything we can do to support local agriculture, I know we're growing and that's inevitable, but a lot of these farms will be able to stay around with local support.
And I'll tell you, Ken also brought in some donuts that were excellent.
Apple cider donuts.
Oh, they were so good. And you've got your own trailer. That's that kind
yeah,
of,
yeah,
we, it's amazing.
We tote the trailer around to the farmer's market and then sometimes to other events and bring smiles to people's faces.
Yes, you do. And
smiles to their guts as they grow outward.
Increasing my waistline.
Yes.
But it's really good. And your apple cider, you know, is that something that you can only get at the farmer's market from you?
No, there are some other places you can get it. Central Ninth Market in downtown Salt Lake, they will carry it. Scion Cider Bar actually will have it as well. It's the one non-alcoholic drink they have there. And I guess if you wanted to spike it with something, then you could. But other than that, Abigail's Oven and Spanish Fork. And, you know, there's a lot of other farms out there that have their own apple cider. And you can find it usually at your local grocery store.
You'll find Rolly's apple cider out there. I believe Chris Wall does an apple cider also. They're all a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find these locally.
Yeah, so look for those ways to get local produce to support our local farmers like Ken and so many others that are making a go of it, and we appreciate them not selling out and maintaining that agriculture. It's so important to our state, and it's good for us, it's good for the economy, it's good for the environment, and it's good for our health. So we do have one call here we can chat with here. Adrian is calling in from Hawaii. Good morning, Adrian.
Oh, good morning. It's so great to hear all the great things that are going on. Just two quick things is that the Dole pineapple plantation here has been doing that for 70, 80 or more years. And that whole business, tourism, they have a little railroad track that they go around their farm, and it is so amazing. And then the other thing is down in St. George, we worked and I worked and really enjoy working with Staley Farms and all that they're doing too. So you've heard about Staley Farms, right?
I have, yeah. They're a cattle. Okay. They're a cattle farm, and they have agritourism as well, right?
Oh, so much, yes. Then they have the Halloween thing and all that, and so it's really a lot. We go by our when we're living there off our mission. Now we'll go back and we'll buy a lot of the beef there from them too. But anyway, just a little thought there, and they're doing that here, and it's really great to listen to your program.
Well, thank you, Adrian. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call. I remember back. And this maybe dates me, I don't know. But back when I was college age, that's, you know, now they have summer jobs where, you know, college kids go off and sell whatever product it is. But I remember when they used to go to Hawaii and spend the summer harvesting pineapple.
It's a Dole plantation.
Yeah, cutting pineapple.
Wow.
Yeah. Here's a couple texts.
Okay.
Off topic. I'll
Let's answer
on
some
us.
Texts.
One of them is, do you know where to get cameo apples? Kent, do you know of anybody still growing cameos?
You know, I have one single tree, and the only commercial grower I knew that had a lot of them took them all out, so I have no
resource.
Was
this a gentleman up in Cache Valley?
No, this was Chris Wall down in,
okay.
in West Mountain.
There was, it's been 10 years, there was somebody that had 5 or 6 acres of cameos in... Oh, not Hyde Park. It was south of Providence area. And I don't know if they're still there or not. But that is one that came in. It was in the stores for 3 or 4 years and then gone.
Yeah.
Cameo is actually one of my favorite apples. You can order them online from like AC Nursery, or if you wanted to buy a bundle of them, Van Wells maybe. But they are disappearing.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's what's happening to a lot of the different apple varieties. And that's really happened a lot with Cameo.
What's the reason for that? Is that because they fall out of favor, or because there's a financial interest in just maintaining
Cameo wasn't a club variety.
Oh, okay.
And there wasn't the profitability in it, and it may not have stored or shipped as well as some other apples. The flavor is important, but when an apple is introduced to the market, especially in the club system, primary thing is shipability and storability. If they can't pick it and harvest it well and it won't store well, it's never going to make it to market in the club system. It has to taste good too. And so when they are breeding apples, it's literally 1 in 10,000 that may make it to market. But, you know, a lot of these apples we're talking about, the Braeburns and, you know, the Golden Delicious, they're not as easy to store. They're not as easy to ship. And so they're taken off the market. And if you can keep introducing new varieties that are under patent and in that tightly controlled club system, you make a lot more money than something like a Fuji or a Gala or even a Cameo.
It just seems sad to hear about all these varieties that are fading away. And it's like, no, I want them all.
Well, you know, there's been so many new club varieties over the last 10 years. I've even seen some of the club varieties just slowly disappear, too. So there's a lot of competition on the apple aisle right now. So
here's another text. Fun story. My dad's cousin was Elliot. He discovered the tree in his yard. He was such a cute guy. Love the Elliot Gold apple.
That's great. That's great. I tell you what, it's right up there in my book with the opal apple. And it's just... it's really good. We've only got a few seconds left here, Kent, but I want to thank you for being here today. It's been a lot of fun to have you here on the show.
Thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it.
It's been great having you. Hopefully we can do this again. And Ton, as always, it's been a lot of fun to be here with you today.
Well, appreciate you doing the show with me.
Always happy to do it. And we'll see you next week on the KSL Greenhouse Show.